Ma left for her home in Amman. When she met her husband, a refugee from Jaffa, and left Gaza, she felt that she had left a piece of her heart behind. But she remained in daily contact with her family for hours, following their news and sharing their events from a distance. She said, "The war began with a constant anxiety inside me. I could barely sleep and I watched the news and the sights of the Israeli bombing, which didn't differentiate between man, woman, child, elderly, sick and wounded. If I hadn't left, if I had stayed and died with them." With the beginning of the Israeli regime airstrikes, Shaima's long calls to her family turned into short words just to make sure they were okay. The family left their home in the Sheikh Ajlin neighborhood when the bombing intensified and moved to a residential building in At-Tofa area where Shaima's uncles live and where her father also had an apartment. At dawn on November 18th, Shaima read the news that a residential building had been targeted in the same area. She was terrified and started crying while trying to contact her family, but no one answered. She said, "My anxiety and fear increased. My husband tried to calm me down, but I felt a disaster was approaching. Communications were cut off from Gaza and I knew nothing. I didn't sleep. I didn't eat. I did nothing but pray and cry." Due to the lack of facilities and the imposed siege, the civil defense crews were unable to work effectively at the site of the bombing. The whole family was struck under the rubble and were extracted dead, except for Zaid, aged 8, the son of Mahmoud, who was killed with his wife and the rest of their children. Shaima describes what happened as an unforgettable tragedy. Little by little, the news began to reach Shaima. The next day, she received word of the survival of her brothers, Montasser, Marwan, Mu'taz, and Muhammad, who were injured. Montasser, her journalist brother, who lost one of his eyes in the bombing, called and began to console her and reassure her about him and the rest of her siblings who had survived. She said, "I continue to cling to the hope that a number of my siblings had survived, despite my intense pain over the loss of my parents and my nephews. I spoke every day with Marwan and Montasser, and I didn't know that these were farewell calls to them as well." On December 1st, an Israeli regime plane bombed the Al-Daraj neighborhood in Gaza City, killing Montasser, Marwan, and a number of other relatives. Montasser remained bleeding for about half an hour without any ambulances being able to reach him. Rayyan 10, one of Shaima's three children, sits in his room in Amman and cries hard. Shaima said he loved his cousins very much and talked to them constantly. He had a special relationship with my father. "I'm still in pain like the first day of the massacre. I talk to their pictures and imagine them next to me." The most painful thing for Shaima is that she couldn't look at them one last time before burying them because of the war and siege. She said, "Gaza is everything I love, and it has the smell of my family and their memories," adding she hoped to return one day. Shaima is left with only her two brothers, Mu'taz, and the injured Muhammad, who needs to travel for treatment but still can't. She talks to them daily and they try to heal their wounds together by remembering the family members amid constant fear due to the continued Israeli regime aggression. Before the war began, due to a glitch in her phone, Shaima lost her photos of her family and was unable to recover them. She said, I got very angry and cried more. I want to look at them again, but I don't have all the pictures. Our first house was completely bombed and turned into rubble, and all my brother's phones were crushed by that. Today, Shaima lives a severely diminished life. Despite everything that has happened, she says that she's still waiting for one of them to contact her, even if the wait is forever.
Citizens under surveillance.
To watch without being seen, that's the spirit of surveillance. It's always present in the citizens' lives, but in the past 10 years, along with the pace of technological advances, we have witnessed a revolution. Targeted surveillance has gradually turned into mass surveillance worldwide. In the past, it only focused on public areas, but now it's violating our privacy. Closing the door or drawing the curtains at home is not enough anymore. The invisible eye is settled in our privacy. Online items and games, activities on social networks, local details of our smartphones, and inquiries on the search engines. Our online life turns into data. The information that, when processed, makes a new form of identity on which we have no control. Our private life could be laid bare in a matter of moments. This is what we will watch in this preventive film. A few minutes would be enough for four hackers to tap into all this information. This experience is a warning. Our online life doesn't belong to us. Never have we been scrutinized so much. 70% of our calls by mobile phones are recorded. Millions of hours of discussion by webcam are diverted by the secret services. Our existence is now accessible on the internet in the form of databases, and every single detail of our lives is retained in the memories by the storage centers. Who records this valuable information? How is it exploited? And for what purposes? We have conducted a survey for 2 years in Europe and in the United States. We went to meet the experts in digital surveillance, hackers and whistleblowers, and also the web giants such as Google or Facebook, and also the secret services that process and collect our data. As the boundaries between surveillance, technology, and power fade, we will see that the gap is growing between two groups. On one side, defenders of individual freedoms, and on the other, supporters of cyber surveillance. A paradigm shift that can lead the citizens towards a new social model.
I think, you know, our modern societies are facing a choice about the future, and I think it's fundamentally a political choice. I think we could decide through an action to say, well, you know, we don't care very much about this. We don't care very much if the government gathers up all this information. We don't care very much about who has access to it, how it's used. We don't care if our children grow up in such a world of constant surveillance. And I think that could happen.
And it was to protect our privacy that on September 5, 2001, only a few days before the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, the European Union was going to adopt the historical sanctions against the United States in order to make it cease the large-scale spying on phone calls and fax messages, and especially to make it give up the establishment of email surveillance. Europe knew that since the Second World War, the NSA, along with the intelligence services of its Anglo-Saxon allies, monitored the old continent under a program called Echelon.
that information, which is far, far larger than it ever has been in the past, because we now have the mechanisms to collect it, store it, and process it, and there's an economic incentive to do so as well, because it's very valuable information, this huge data avatar that follows us around, sort of like a spirit of Greek mythology, we're aware still of our physicality. We're still primed in that universe in our thinking.
Maria Costea is the first citizen to bring an action before the European Court of Justice. Google played its best trumps against him. Francisco Diaz, former European Commissioner Mario Monti's right-hand man, became the lawyer of the large monopoly groups. He manages a group of about 10 lawyers. The Grand Inquisitor, a Spanish, defends Google in Brussels. The result? The pressure was inflicted anyhow. The prosecutor himself considers that Google, as much as the search engine is concerned, is not responsible for the data processing. Accordingly, Mario's complaint is inadmissible. But the last word in this affair, after being deliberated upon, would be rendered by the judge of the European Court.
As controller,
we recognize that there are concerns in Europe and other places about companies that are successful, that have wide scope and have done well and that are large, and so we recognize that, and we always are willing to listen. We've cooperated over the last several years with the European Commission in its investigation relating to our search products, and we believe we have a resolution of that we hope will be finalized soon, and we will continue to work with regulators and legislators across Europe to make sure that we strike the right balance on all of these things.
The European law that regulates the protection of data goes back to 1995. Back then, the internet was only in its infancy. By his action, Mario has changed this legal gap and opened a basic deliberation about it. A year later, surprisingly, the verdict of the European Court changes in favor of Mario and the Spanish Agency for Data Protection. It was unprecedented. The judge declared that Google was well aware of the data processing. Maria Costea could finally request to restore the circumstances that incriminated him. The Silicon Valley giant had to comply. The operator of an internet search engine is responsible for the processing of the personal data that appear on the web pages published by third parties. The right to be forgotten becomes an applicable right for every European citizen. Spain's everyday internet warrior who cut free from Google's tentacles. The right to be forgotten, Google dismissed by the European Court.
We've been working on this case for several years. I think when we heard the ruling from the European Court of Justice, we were somewhat surprised. We thought the ruling was flawed and continue to think that and think there should be a dialogue in Europe about how to implement the right to be forgotten and perhaps through legislation or other dialogue figure out a way to implement it perhaps in a more focused way. But we felt that it was a problem that and we would have problems implementing it because it's very hard to figure out what are the circumstances under which you remove a search result without feeling like you're censoring information, right? And I think that in the past few weeks we've seen a number of examples where they've been very, very difficult decisions, and these are decisions that there's also a question about whether a private company is the right place to make those decisions. But the court says that indeed that we should be doing it.
Google has already received 145,000 internet applications from Europe. However, this decision of the European Court is a partial victory for European internet users. First, because Google becomes a judge and a party, and then because Mario's data will still be visible from outside the European Union.
Who is in control? Who should have the power in an information society? I mean, that is one of those big questions. And the powers are, of course, increasingly strong if you see what the value is of all this information being developed. So this is why in the review of the European rules, we have now seen
the concept of mega fines, fines running into millions and possibly billions of euros, to make sure that the incentives are, the negative incentives, are strong enough. And I think that if we introduce those much stronger mechanisms, we can control, reduce, steer gradually those new forces.
In reaction to the rapid development of the data storage and recordings, the first experiences of the citizens' resistance are beginning to emerge. The challenge is a complex one. How should we find some other alternatives that can allow each of us to be in control of our own data? How should we maintain a day-to-day online life beyond the reach of the tentacles of internet giants? This is a challenge set by Alex Pentland, the director of the MIT Media Lab and the great defender of internet privacy.
So the question is, how can we achieve this control of our digital identity? It turns out that it appears that there's at least a very good solution, maybe not a perfect solution, that's relatively easy to achieve. It requires that people be given notification when there's data recorded about them. It requires that people knowledgeably understand what's happening with that data and have the right to say what happens with data about them. So that just as you have the right to say what happens with your own body, you have the right to say with data about you. That's called provenance and permissions.
How to secure the data? By what means should we give every citizen control over their data? This is the subject of an experiment carried out in Trento in northern Italy with the participation of MIT and Alex Pentland. Thanks to funding from the city of Trento and the telecommunications companies, this small town has become the laboratory of dozens of researchers. Whereas our data leaves us from everywhere, the users have set up a cloud on the scale of the city in which each participant has a personal mailbox and can choose the data they want to share with the Trento community. They are 150 volunteer guinea pigs equipped with Phonix phones to instruct the users to scrutinize their personal activities. The objective is to determine the benefit that we can all enjoy by controlling our data. Amy, an American mother who has been dwelling in Trento in recent years, agreed to participate in the experiment for a year.
Something similar to what I'm doing, or you did it earlier today?
Yeah, but now I'm doing some...
I'm going around with GPS turned on. How is that data then available, and what can be extracted from that? It's interesting to know, first of all, what that data is. So for me right now, I'm participating because I'm interested to see the kinds of data that they're collecting and to see the possibilities, the things that they can do with it.
Thanks to the secure cloud created by the Living Lab, Amy can choose the personal data that she wants to share. The researchers help her determine what data she is interested in making public in order to draw a social benefit. We follow Amy, who is going to visualize her data and the people she shares it with.
So this is essentially the homepage that they give us that allows us to have access to the data that we have in the system. One of the basic pieces of information is the profile. So if I go here, I can see the information that they have about me, and then I can decide how much of this data that I want to make available to the other people who are in the project. I can see the same information that I see on my phone. And I can see, for example, I have a friend who's participating in this, and this is the information that she has made available. Privacy today is certainly different than privacy was 20 years ago before we had devices and internet connections and all of these things. So it's true that closing your door gives you some amount of privacy, but we're always online. So there have to be things that change about how we maintain privacy today versus 20 years ago or whenever But at the same time, you should still be able to maintain that level of privacy to say, I close my door, I don't share these things.
You want to be able to turn it off if you don't like it. When you give people that power, then they become more willing to share. And that, to me, moves towards a creative sharing society, which is the direction we want to go. Is it perfect? No. Is it a lot better than we are today? Yes. Do we have to do it now? Absolutely, because we're at a tipping point where these little companies in the gray and the NSA are beginning to steal our digital freedom. Our digital self is evaporating into serfdom or slavery. We need to restore, or create, perhaps more accurately, our digital persona and our rights to autonomy and self-control of our digital autonomy or persona.
Far from Trento and the project of personal data security advocated by Alex Pentland, we're all devoid of privacy because of those who have a stronghold on the internet. And on these servers, we abandon a very great part of our personal history to these operators that are not willing to share their control. We leave a big part of our lives there, and they come there to search who we are, what we are, who we love, and who we hate. The multinational internet companies and the intelligence services of the most technologically advanced countries seem to share the common goal of reducing our private lives to nothing. Our data, stored without any real control, represent a potentially massive surveillance that is never equal. A new form of power that is concentrated on the outer Atlantic.
What I wanted to see is if you could give me a yes or no answer to the question, does the NSA collect any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans?
No, sir.
It does not.
Not wittingly. There are cases where they could inadvertently, perhaps, collect, but not wittingly.
3 months after Edward Snowden, a simple systems administrator at the NSA, made the statements of James Clapper a state lie, he published the top secret documents of the agency that revealed the existence of a massive surveillance program not only on American citizens but also on the whole world. Unlike other whistleblowers like Thomas Drake, who just testified against the NSA, Edward Snowden left with thousands of top secret documents from the agency. The request contained a highly confidential order from the Secret Court of Justice, FISA, forcing Verizon, one of the most principled U.S. telephone companies, to hand over some comprehensive information about the calls of its American customers to the NSA. Snowden is one of the international presses there. Lawyer Jesslyn Raddick, the former member of the U.S. Department of Justice, who had defended Thomas Drake and other whistleblowers, was in charge of defending Edward Snowden. His case became a state affair.
I take that seriously when a former CIA director says that my client should be hung by his neck from a tree, should be lynched. When the former director of NSA jokes with the chair of the House Intelligence Committee about putting my client on the assassination list. I'm not going to take any chances, and that means I have to do a lot in terms of encrypting and protecting myself and my clients, and not just Snowden, but all of my intel clients.
Snowden transmits thousands of documents that he gains to several influential newspapers so that they can continue the investigations. A team from the Washington Post received the prestigious Pulitzer Prize for its contributions. Among them was Ashkan Soltani, an independent journalist and a renowned specialist in internet security and internet privacy.
And even in the warranted targeted surveillance where they get a FISA order, where they go to a court and they get approval or they provide the justification under FAA, the FISA Amendments Act, that the bulk of the information or the people that they surveil were not actually the ones they intended to surveil, right? So if I'm a target, everyone that I communicate with, whether it's via email or if I'm on a chat line, if I'm on a, you know, chat forum, all of those people's communications are also collected and stored by the NSA. And why that's interesting is two things. One, that you cast this wide net, right? So imagine you're fishing, right? You cast and you only want to catch crabs, but you cast a huge net and you catch everything in the sea, you know, fish and octopus and everything else, and you pull that all up. And you might say, well, that's the only way we can catch crabs. But what was also interesting is that once you've done that, you don't throw the rest of the octopus and the other fish away. You keep all of that as well in case you want to have it later. And I think that's what's kind of troubling about this analogy.
The Washington Post. U.S. Mines Internet Firms Data Documents Show. The second document, which was published again, shook the planet. The code name of the program, PRISM, was revealed.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
نذر القرآن يهدي للتي أقوم ويبشر المؤمنين.
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد اینها چیزایی لازم است
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones
اما این کافی نیست
But it's not enough
نقیم الدین ولا تتفرقوا فیه
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran
کتاب الله
اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا
أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا
فدعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem. Today, inshallah, we'll talk about Ayah 36 of Surah An-Nisa on page 84 of the Quran Kareem. So, this is a long ayah, but nice points are here. We'll mention shortly. Then, like a lot of tajweed rules are here, okay? That the most important ones, inshallah, we will mention. So, first and foremost, let's fawad Ali Nasir all together. And brothers and sisters, dear listeners, we will all together listen to the recitation. Then, we'll get back to our lesson. Okay? One, two, three, let's go.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. واعبدوا الله ولا تشركوا به شيئا وبالوالدين إحسانا وبذي القربى واليتامى والمساكين والجار ذي القربى والجار الجنب والصاحب بالجنب وابن السبيل وما ملكت أيمانكم إن الله لا يحب من كان مختالا فخورا.
Very nice recitation, mashallah. Very nice recitation. Let me read it once, okay, without tajweed. Then inshallah, after the short explanation, we'll mention the tajweed rules. Then we'll recite it with tajweed rules, okay?
Yes.
Yes. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم واعبدوا الله ولا تشركوا به شيئا وبالوالدين إحسانا وبذي القربى واليتامى والمساكين والجار ذي القربى والجار الجنب والصاحب بالجنب وابن السبيل وما ملكت أيمانكم إن الله لا يحب من كان مختالا فخورا. This is without تجويد, okay? I didn't recite it, but we'll mention the tajweed rules, then we'll recite it beautifully. Okay, what does Allah Almighty say here? وَاعْبُدُوا اللَّهَ وَلَا تُشْرِكُوا بِهِ شَيْئًا. Worship Allah and do not ascribe any partners to Him, because shirk is ظُلْمٌ عَظِيمٌ. In the next verses, inshallah, in this surah, we'll study, okay? That Allah Almighty says, إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يَغْفِرُ أَيُّشْرَكَ بِهِ. Allah Almighty will not forgive someone who counts partner for Allah Almighty, who commits shirk. وَيَغْفِرُ مَا دُونَ ذَلِكَ لِمَنْ يَشَاءُ. And Allah Almighty might forgive what? The other sins, okay? Other than the shirk. The shirk, Allah Almighty will not. In Prophet Luqman, عليه السلام, says to his son, يَا بُنَيَّ لَا تُشْرِكْ بِاللَّهِ إِنَّ الشِّرْكَ لَظُلْمٌ عَظِيمٌ. Do not commit shirk, okay? Do not count partners for Allah Almighty. إِنَّ الشِّرْكَ لَظُلْمٌ عَظِيمٌ. This is the great oppression, the great wrong thing, okay? So don't commit this one. So Allah Almighty says, see how important it is. وَعْبُدُ اللَّهَ وَلَا تُشْرِكُوا بِهِ شَيْئًا. Allah Almighty commands us to worship Him, right? One point. وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ. Right after His worship, Allah Almighty commands us to what? To be good to our parents. وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا. One point. وَبِذِي الْقُرْبَى. As well to the relatives. Next. وَالْيَتَامَى. To the orphans. وَالْمَسَاكِينِ. To the needy people. وَالْجَارِ ذِي الْقُرْبَى. To the near neighbors. وَالْجَارِ الْجُنُوبِ. to the distant neighbors, those who are far away. Okay? وَالصَّاحِبِ بِالْجَنْبِ, the companion at your side, any friend you have. Okay? He's not your neighbor, but any friend you have, doesn't matter, okay? He's, for example, a very religious person, or like normally a religious person, okay? Or, for example, he's poor, he's rich, doesn't matter, okay? Your friends, وَالصَّاحِبِ بِالْجَنْبِ. وَبْنِ السَّبِيلِ, the traveler. Somebody has traveled to, for example, has come to Qum. Now, okay, he, like, his pocket, no money. I mean, it was full when he just started traveling to Qum, okay? But now he arrived here, he has nothing, okay? Yes?
Yes.
And so here, Fawad has got a lot of cash, okay? Fawad looks at him, oh, this man, poor, came from wherever, okay? So he doesn't have anything, okay? Fawad says, well, can I help him or not? Oh, Ali Nasir says, come on, Fawad, you got a lot of cash, just give him some, okay? So here, Allah Almighty says, be good to the traveler. Fawad, give him some money. I'll give you. Okay? So Fawad is, yeah, of course, he is so gentle. He's a gentleman, okay? He just helps, yeah, the traveler. So, Wabni Sabil, Fawad, will you do it? Yeah?
Yes.
Alright, mashallah, okay. وَمَا مَلَكَتْ أَيْمَانُكُمْ, and also be good to your slaves. Slaves. In the early Islam, we had slaves, yeah, slavery, but alhamdulillah, Islam is a religion that fights with slavery, okay? Really, Islam fights with slavery, okay? We can see this in the history, okay? Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, one of the best things, Allah, Imams were always doing the good things, yeah, best things, okay? So, one of the greatest things that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam was doing was what? He was buying slaves. Okay, slaves, and he would train him, he would teach them Islamic teachings, and he would release them, flee them, give him some money, flee them, and go get married, make a family. That was what Imam Sajjad alayhi salam did. So this means Islam is fighting with slavery. Yeah, that was a point I had to say. إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُحِبُّ مَنْ كَانَ مُخْتَالًا فَخُورًا. Allah Almighty indeed does not like anyone who is a swaggering braggart. Somebody who's proud, who doesn't care about others. No neighbor, no mom, no dad, no respect. Right? No people's rights. These things, if somebody is such kind of person who does not behave with his dad and mom correctly well, okay, he doesn't really worth it. We're not worthy of this, okay, to respect that kind of person.
قرآني نبض حياتي قرآني طهر ذاتي قرآني عصمة أمري قرآني طوق نجاتي قرآني نبض حياتي.
How to learn Quran easy? What is the correct way to read the Quran? What is the correct way to learn Arabic and understand the Quran? Be with Let's Recite the Quran.
Brothers and sisters, that's enough for the explanation, inshallah. Be careful, inshallah, to listen and practice the tajwidrus that we will be mentioning right now, and practice them, inshallah. More explanations on the tafsir, I want you, inshallah, to refer to the tafsir books. Fawad and Ali Nasir, it's time to mention some tajwidrus, yes? The important
yes.
ones here. So, wa'budullah, the rule for Hamzatul Wasl, there are two main rules. Yes, Fawad? Could you
yes.
say first one? Skipping Hamzatul Wasl.
Yes.
Second one? Pronouncing Hamzatul Wasl. Okay, if you do not say, I will say, no problem. You shy? Okay. So sometimes we need to pronounce Hamzatul Wasl. Sometimes we need to skip Hamzatul Wasl.
Yes.
When do you pronounce it? When do you skip it? When it appears, okay, when it occurs, right at the beginning of a word,
we will pronounce.
When it appears, when it occurs, okay, at the beginning of a word,
we will put a fatha.
No, it depends. So listen, when for example, look, wa'budu, the word hamzatul was and ayn or budu, right? This word, I'm not pronouncing it, okay? Because I'm gonna tell you the root. So this word, how to read it? So if you read the previous letter, the letter before the hamzatul wasl, if you want to pronounce it, if you want to read it and join it with this word having hamzatul wasl, so you skip hamzatul wasl.
Yes.
What did I say? I said if you start from a word right before the word having hamzatul wasl and you're joining these two words together, skip hamzatul wasl. Hamzatul wasl will be sacrificed.
Yes.
So wa'budu, you don't pronounce the hamzatul wasl. But if you start from the word that has hamzatul wasl, right from that word, not from the previous word. So here, for example, you don't read the waw, you start from hamzatul wasl and then the word you read. How do you do? You read it here. And it depends on the letters, okay? On the word itself, is it a verb or a noun? And if it is a verb, okay, it depends on the third letter, okay? The harakat of the third letter, if the third letter has a dhamma, okay? Put a dhamma on hamzatul wasl. U'budu, look, ba has a dhamma. If it has a fatha or a kasra, put a kasra. For example, i'lam. Oh, this way.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's totally about hamzatul wasl, and that's one of the important points. Next one, wa'budu Allah wa la tushriku bihi shay'a wa bil walidayni ihsana wa bi dhil qurba. Here the rule 10, idgham is also important, okay?
Yes.
So whenever you have tanween or nun sakin plus waw, ya, lam, mim, nun, merge the sound of them. Ihsanan wa bidhil qurba changes to?
Ihsanaw.
Ihsanaw wa bidhil qurba. Plus a ghunna sound, nasal sound, and also extend the sound for?
Two beats.
That's all. وَبِذِي الْقُرْبَى وَالْيَتَامَى وَالْمَسَاكِينِ Look, we skip Hamzatul Wasl. وَبِذِي الْقُرْبَى Hamzatul Wasl is skipped there. Hamzatul Wasl is that alif that has like the front part of Saad on the top.
Yeah,
the head of the Saad on the top. That's Hamzatul Wasl. وَبِذِي الْقُرْبَى Now, if you read just from the word that has Hamzatul Wasl, how do you read it? Because it's a noun and it has Lam al-Ta'rif. So if a word has a lam al-ta'rif with it, you put an a on the top of hamzatul wasl always. Al-qurba, al-yatama, al-masakin, al-jar, al-qurba, al-jar, al-junubi, al-sahibi, al-jambi. Okay, this ibn is an exceptional word. Yeah. You put a kasra, ibn. As-sabil, for example, okay? This ones. That's all. Allah, so hamzatul wasl will be pronounced this way. But when you join the words together, hamzatul wasl will be skipped. وَبِذِي الْقُرْبَى وَالْيَتَامَى وَالْمَسَاكِينِ وَالْجَارِ ذِي الْقُرْبَى وَالْجَارِ الْجُنُوبِ وَالصَّاحِبِ بِالْجَنْبِ Right? وَالصَّاحِبِ بِالْجَنْبِ has an important rule here. بِالْجَنْبِ If you see the noon, on the top of noon, بِالْجَنْبِ The word بِالْجَنْبِ On the top of noon, what do you see?
A baby meme.
What does that baby mean?
It refers to the rule iqlab applying
iqlab.
Here.
Good job. So how do you apply it?
You make an half meme sound.
Half meme sound or hidden meme sound.
Yeah, change in the...
Instead of the noon, you pronounce a meme sound, but a hidden meme sound, not a full meme sound.
Yes.
Right? Do not let your lips touch.
Exactly.
So, وَالْجَارِ الْجُنُوبِ وَالصَّاحِبِ بِالْجَنْبِ بِالْجَنْبِ Extend the sound for two beats, nasal sound. بِالْجَنْبِ وَبْنِ السَّبِيلِ What's the rule?
قَلْقَلَ
وَبْنِ السَّبِيلِ MashaAllah. Bounce the sound. وَمَا مَلَكَتْ أَيْمَانُكُمْ قِلَى and صِلَى Here, the two stopping signs. قِلَى and صِلَى وَلَا تُشْرِكُوا بِهِ شَيْئًا صِلَى here. وَمَا مَلَكَتْ أَيْمَانُكُمْ قِلَى on the top if you see. These two are just the opposite. They have one thing in common. They have one thing in difference, yes? So, the difference is that قِلَى says it's better to stop. But صِلَى tells it's better to
Continue.
The common thing is that they both also gives this meaning that you can
continue
or stop. You can continue or stop. But Qila says, it's better to stop. Sela says, better to continue. That's all. من كان, hide the sound of nun. من كان مختالا فخورا. لن فخورا, hide the sound of nun. Tanween, that's all. Ready to recite after me?
Yes.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
واعبدوا الله ولا تشركوا به شيئا.
واعبدوا الله ولا تشركوا به شيئا.
وبالوالدين إحسانا وبذي القربى واليتامى والمساكين والجار ذي القربى.
وبالوالدين إحسانا وبذي القربى واليتامى والمساكين والجار ذي القربى.
أحسنتم. Somebody ran out of breath. والجار ذي القربى والجار الجنب والصاحب بالجنب.
والجار ذي القربى والجار الجنب والصاحب بالجنب.
وابن السبيل وما ملكت أيمانكم.
وابن السبيل وما ملكت أيمانكم.
إن الله لا يحب من كان مختالا فخورا.
إن الله لا يحب من كان مختالا فخورا.
ما شاء الله. Allah bless you, inshallah. That's all for today. Brothers and sisters, stay with IRB English Radio, inshallah. Thank you so much, Fawad and Ali Nasir. Thanks for being with us today. Inshallah, we'll be here with you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International School.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور. آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به. هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Part 2.
In the 1990s, a big crime was committed in Southeast Europe, which reminded the world of the Middle Ages. The Bosniaks were killed by other groups in former Yugoslavia because they said no to the formation of Serbia and its independence, and more importantly, because they were Muslims. Genocide was committed against Bosniaks in order to cleanse the Green Continent of Muslims and consign Islam into oblivion forever. But a different fate awaited the Bosniaks. This is Sarajevo, the capital city of Bosnia and Herzegovina that shares borders with Serbia and Croatia. Bosnia and Herzegovina is a country which has survived hundreds of years of genocide and has managed to keep Islam alive by itself in Europe. One of the existing Islamic symbols in Sarajevo is a water-drinking place called Sakohone, which is located in an old neighborhood of the city. It is said that a total of 72 such places had been built in Sarajevo in memory of the 72 companions of the third Shia Imam, Imam Hussein, who were martyred during the Battle of Karbala. Currently, one of those places has turned into a cultural symbol of Bosnia and Herzegovina and its capital city. Following the Second World War, the competition between communism and liberalism resulted in the formation of the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia by the Balkan countries, and that marked the beginning of a new era for Muslims in this region. With the collapse of the Soviet Union, the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia witnessed changes as well, and various regions there declared independence. Slavs in Slovenia, Croats in Croatia, and Muslims in Bosnia and Herzegovina. But the formation of a Muslim-majority country that opposed the establishment of a Serbian government was not to the liking of European leaders. A day after a referendum on independence, a plot was hatched that caused the genocide of Muslims in this region. Muslims in Sarajevo gather in the highest part of the city, awaiting iftar when they break their fast. At dusk, artillery is fired to announce iftar, a measure that children and teenagers like very much. Artillery is fired as a sign to announce the end of the fasting month of Ramadan and the arrival of Eid al-Fitr. Those who have fasted eat their iftar meal to break their fast on the last day of Ramadan and congratulate each other on this occasion. On Eid al-Fitr morning, before sunrise, groups of people go to the venue where Eid prayer is held. A few people would forget the first time that they took part in Eid al-Fitr prayers. Fathers, hand in hand with their sons, go to the venue of the prayers to join other people taking part in the ritual. Congregational prayers at mosques as well as ceremonies to serve iftar coupled with Eid al-Fitr prayers have integrated Bosnian Muslims, and they keep trying to maintain that as much as they can. Christmas and the birth anniversary of Jesus Christ is the most important festival in Europe. But in Bosnia and Herzegovina, where the majority of people are Muslims, Eid al-Fitr is and has long been the most important religious festivity. Muslims believe that death is not the end of life and that life will continue in afterworld. Based on this belief, people in Bosnia go to graveyards on Eid al-Fitr to remember and commemorate their loved ones who have died and recite parts of the Holy Quran for them. Part of celebrations on Eid al-Fitr in Bosnia, family members along with parents gather and have lunch. The meal includes foods that are made especially on the occasion of Eid al-Fitr. The younger members of the family say congratulations to the elder and celebrate Eid along with them. Every year, on the second day of Eid al-Fitr celebrations, Muslims in Bosnia and Herzegovina hold a ceremony to commemorate war martyrs. The ceremony, during which parts of the Holy Quran are recited, is held in cemeteries where the martyrs are buried. Rasul Haydari was an Iranian military advisor who had come to Bosnia to help people there during the war. Years on since his martyrdom, Bosnians say they still owe him a great deal, and each year they commemorate him on the anniversary of his death.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.